Hello, this is Sarah Hunt. I'm a consultant with the National Long-Term Care Ombudsman Resource Center. We are delighted to have such great participation this afternoon for the third training call we have on NORS coding. It's module 3 of the 4 series of training. So welcome, and as you heard, the call is being recorded and will be posted on the Ombudsman Resource Center website later so that other people can listen to it. We're delighted to have you and to have some great speakers with us this afternoon. Before I introduce the speakers and give you more information about the call itself and how we'll proceed through the materials, I want to ask Lori Smentanka, who's the director of the Ombudsman Resource Center, to give us a few instructions for how we're going to deal with the audio portion and the web-based portion of the call today. So, Lori, would you please give us some instructions?
Sure. Thanks, Sarah. And hi, everyone. Welcome to today's call. As Sarah mentioned, today's call is being recorded and will be posted to the Ombudsman Resource Center website within the next couple of days, along with all of the material. And that website address is www.ltcombudsman.org. For today's call, as has been mentioned, all of your lines will be muted throughout the call, except for the presenters. And in order to ask a question, when you're looking at your computer screen, up in the top left corner, there's the opportunity for you to raise your hand to ask a question. And once we get to the question and answer period of the call, which will be towards the end, we will call on you specifically and give you instructions about how to unmute and then mute again your lines once you've finished asking your question. There's also a chat feature on your computer screen in the bottom left-hand corner, and if you type in a question there, we will try to make sure that it gets answered either over the phone as we're talking throughout the presentation, or we'll respond to you directly through chat, or we will get back to you after the call if we're not able to answer it in the time frame that we have today. So, with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Sarah, and we will get started.
Thanks, Lori. I wanted to quickly review what we plan to do today, which is kind of a mini agenda, and let you know where we're heading with this call. Obviously, the purpose of the training is to improve the consistency in NORS reporting within each state and across the country, and I do want to make very clear that everything in the quizzes, the information, the principles we'll be talking about today, as well as in all these modules, is based upon the Administration on Aging's NORS instructions. It's to be used uniformly. Your state may have some different terms or some other kinds of things it collects as part of your ombudsman reporting, but the materials, the definitions, the terminology that we are using in each of these modules is based upon the federal NORS instructions. So on the call today, we hope to provide more specific clarifying information on the aspects of coding that have to do with verifying complaints, the disposition, and closing cases. We're going to start by reviewing the basic principles, reviewing the disposition codes, answering the quiz coding scenarios, and I hope that each of you received the quiz by email or downloaded it and went through and answered it, and I hope you have it in front of you because it's going to be self-grading today. We're going to answer questions related to the quiz scenarios and the answers to those scenarios, and then if we have time, we will have some time to respond to other questions and examples that are related to verification, disposition, and closing cases. But we do want to proceed by going through all the quiz scenarios and the answers and a brief explanation about the rationale. And then after that, we will take questions, as Lori explained, by chat or by raising your hand, and we can unmute, or you can mute and unmute your line. To begin with today, as I mentioned, we have some excellent presenters. The first person we want to have speak is Louise Ryan, who's the Ombudsman Program Specialist with the Administration on Aging in Washington, D.C. And Louise has helped us significantly in pulling the materials together and updating them for this call. So she's going to have a few brief remarks. And then Shelley Hitt, who's Colorado State Ombudsman but also chair of the NASOP Working to Improve NORS Consistency Committee, will say a few things about revising this module. And we will move then into the basic principles, the coding, and go into the quiz scenarios. And throughout the whole call, Louise and Shelley will be helping with some interaction, some training, and have quite a significant role in responding to questions. So thank you so much for your time and participation. And Louise, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah and Lori. And thank you, everybody, for participating in this afternoon's call. I really do appreciate your taking the time out to review. For some of you, it's a review, and for others, it's kind of more new learning. But it's really important at the federal level that we try to adequately and accurately show the work that you do that's so important, and that we get it as consistent and as accurate as possible. We do use this data, you know, in reports to Congress, and when other legislative issues and regulatory issues come up, we rely on this information. And so the more consistent we can be, the better the resident's story and what the picture of what's going on for residents is. And just a couple other things I wanted to say is, you know, we have examples that we're using, and our focus is on that consistent, accurate coding. There may be questions you have about practice or what I do in my state, but what we're really trying to focus in on is what are the definitions and how do you properly code so that we are, again, consistent. So just kind of a reminder about that. And otherwise, I'm going to turn it over to Shelley, and we'll continue on. Thank you.
Thanks. Excuse me. Thanks, Louise and Sarah. Hello to all my fellow ombudsmen. Real quick, as Sarah said, WINC is the work group to improve NOR's consistency. We've been around for a while and gone through various changes and additions, et cetera, to our membership. In Colorado, we'd like to refer to WINC as why is NOR's so confusing? And thus we have some training. But WINC is made up of both state and local ombudsmen because we as state ombudsmen know that really it's the local ombudsmen who do all the heavy lifting and struggle with these issues on a daily basis. So we have asked them to be a part of this group, and they bring a lot of valuable feedback to us. WINC set two goals for itself. One was to improve the quality and quantity of NOR's training, and the other was to provide a method to review NOR's coding questions that come in from both state and local ombudsmen, and develop a process for designing a consensus answer, centralizing this process to reduce the possibility of sort of multiple and conflicting answers out there floating around to these kinds of questions, then get our answers blessed by AOA and posted for future reference by all of you. The WINC group has been really actively involved in reviewing and revising these four training modules over the last year. We've been able to identify where we think that they're confusing or ambiguous, and that's based on training we've done with our staff and questions that we've been asked by other ombudsmen. I want to put in a plug for webinar number 4, which will be March 7th, because the WINC group in particular felt that that was the module that needed the most revision. So that is being done as we speak, and you can look forward to better quiz questions and training along with those new and improved scenarios on March 7th. After completion of Module 4 materials, WINC is going to return more completely to the work of answering coding questions, which we have been doing all along, but just not as quickly or as completely as we might have liked or as you might have liked. And the process has slowed down a little as well in terms of getting those questions and answers posted to the NORC website for the benefit of all of you. But please stay tuned. That's going to happen very soon. We've been working with Lori and NORC staff on getting that done. And finally, you'll see my contact information listed on the slide. If you have questions, coding questions, or suggestions for future NORS training, et cetera, please don't hesitate to get in touch. Thanks.
Thank you, Shelley. That was very helpful information to have. Excuse me, there's nothing like squeaking on a webinar for everybody to hear. I wanted to begin by reviewing some basic principles on verifying complaints, but I want to preface this by saying that everything we're using on the call today is posted on the NORC website under Information for NORS Training Module 3, and the PowerPoint, as well as notes for the PowerPoint, a version with the notes, will also be up there right after the call and the quiz answers. So you can replicate the training or review it or do it as self-study as often as needed. Just quickly to go over the basic principles and verifying complaints. Ombudsmen obviously always try to verify the complaints, but you can work to resolve a complaint whether it's verified or not. And sometimes that may be one of those, huh, what does that mean? What's the point of verifying a complaint? Sometimes, even though you may not be able to really say significantly whether something's likely to have happened or not based on the fact scenario brought to you, you may be able, by creating a conversation between a resident and a staff person or sitting down and talking about something, you may be able to open up a resolution or some other options for a resident without really having to have hardcore evidence that a complaint was verified. The definition of verified, and this is really important because this is one of the definitions that ombudsmen use a little bit differently than other groups that do investigation, and that's because you're designed to be different and intended to be different. Bottom line for an ombudsman, verification, and this is the definition in NORS, is it's determined after work, and that's ombudsman work, interviews, record inspection, observation, etc. You take some actions to try to see what really was going on. But you decide that the circumstances described in the complaint are generally true. And that's all it takes to call something verified. It's just generally, yes, what was described to you as a complaint, it generally happened. It's a true situation. Basic principles for disposition, it's kind of the one-to-one ratio. One disposition code for each complaint, and each complaint has one disposition code. So you can't close a case and have a complaint out there hanging as part of the case that doesn't have a disposition code. Every code in the complaint needs a disposition code, or every code in the case needs a disposition code. How do you choose a disposition code? Going back to ombudsman basics, you follow the direction of the resident. If the resident cannot give you direction, look to the resident's representative or to the complainant to determine if the resolution is consistent with the rights and interests of the resident. Disposition codes record your outcomes, not your activities. You can do lots and lots and lots of activities related to investigating, resolving a complaint and follow up on it, but the disposition code only records the outcome, not all the other things that you do. In terms of basic principles for closing a case, you close a case when none of the complaints require further action from the ombudsman and every complaint has been assigned a disposition code. Now, let's take a look at some of the disposition codes. And you see reiterated, disposition codes are for closed cases. And the disposition codes are on a handout by themselves, kind of plucked out, as well as part of the overall NORS instructions. One of the key codes that you can have as a disposition code or as an outcome is legislative or regulatory action is required, which means basically that some policy or regulatory or legislative change is needed in order to resolve the issue. Not resolved. Well, this means that the problem is not corrected or that the change that was made was not to the satisfaction of the resident in any way at all. Withdrawn is quite simply, the complaint was withdrawn at the request of the resident or the complainant, or it was discontinued by the ombudsman. If a significant portion of a complaint was resolved prior to withdrawal, you can record it as partially resolved. And I think some of the scenarios that we have in the quiz may help clarify this. Then we have the disposition codes for resolution and one of the dispositions codes is that it's referred for resolution. So the ombudsman couldn't resolve it on your own or prevail upon somebody else to resolve it. So you have referred it to somebody to take action. And there are three different types of referred for action, and you need to choose one of these. One is the final disposition was not obtained. For instance, you referred the complaint to another agency for investigation, but you never received a report of the final outcome, even though you tried. And there is some requirement or responsibility on the ombudsman to do some follow-up and try to get a response back from the agency. So that's D1. D2 is the other agency failed to act. They just didn't take action on your referral for any one of a number of potential reasons, and ombudsmen have been known to nag a lot and try to make an agency take action, but sometimes for very legitimate reasons they don't. Number three, the agency did not substantiate. You referred it for resolution, and the other agency looked into it, but they did not substantiate that it was something that they need to work on or that it was a valid kind of complaint. So basically, they didn't support the referred complaint, but they did act on it. So there are three different kinds of outcomes, dispositions for a complaint that you referred. Another category of disposition codes is no action is needed or appropriate. Going back to the fact that after ombudsman investigation, it was determined that no action was needed. Some examples of what may trigger this code: the family complains, but the resident says, there's no problem, back off, I don't have anything that I want you to work on. No action's needed on the part of the ombudsman, no further action. The second kind of example is the investigation indicates that no change or further action's needed. It's after you do some follow-up. Or the third one, perhaps the resident dies or moves and the complaint is just no longer relevant. There's nothing there for you to follow up on or to act on. The last two categories of disposition codes are partially resolved and resolved. The partially resolved, obviously, is that the complaint was addressed in part to the satisfaction of the resident or complainant, but some problem remained. They just weren't 100% satisfied. There are lots of different reasons when you encounter that kind of situation. And I think some of the quiz answers will get to helping to clarify why something may be partially resolved as opposed to resolved and why you close a case even though it may be partially resolved. Resolution, resolved, is what everybody's goal is. And, in fact, ombudsmen have a pretty high percentage of their cases that find a successful resolution, which means the resident's satisfied with the outcome. And, of course, that's the best of all scenarios. There's also the caveat, going back to resolve, that we talked about under the principles. If the resident cannot communicate his or her satisfaction, and the ombudsman then, under that situation, can look to the resident's representative or to the complainant to determine if the resolution is consistent with the rights and interest of the resident. So there are some other ways to kind of decide whether or not the resolution is partially resolved or resolved if a resident cannot clearly express their wishes. We want to move to the quiz portion of this, and this is where the fun comes. Like we've done on some of these other calls, we've inserted a few polls. So get ready to key in your answers on some of these, not on every question for the sake of time, but just a few of them. We thought it'd be interesting to see what some of you think. So on the quiz, you had 13 little situations, and for each of the 13, you were asked four questions. One is, who is the complainant? What is the complaint code? And for the complaint codes, you would have to pull out the NORS instructions with all the complaint codes that we covered on the previous call. And they're also posted on the website. Some of you may have them etched into your brain cells by this point in time. The third one is the complaint verified? The fourth one is, what is the disposition code? And because this module is really focusing on verifying closing cases and disposition codes, we're going to talk about the complaint code itself, the categories, but we're not going to spend time discussing whether it goes in 65 or 66 or 68 and what's the difference in the codes, but we will give you the correct answers, and then if you have questions, we can follow up with those later. Tips for taking these NORSE quizzes, and this applies to all of them. Number one, don't overthink the scenarios. Just take them as based on the facts you're given. Try not to go into all those many things about the yes buts, but what ifs, or and how could they dare be ready to close this case. Base your answers on the facts presented and presume that ombudsmen have done all of the good things that ombudsman skills and practice would indicate. The third is focus on the coding, not the ombudsman practice and skills. This is targeted coding quiz to really help understand and clarify the differences in various definitions or options for coding cases. So that's what these scenarios are designed to do. So with that, we are going to move it right ahead into the scenarios. Shelley, I believe you're going to walk us through the first one.
I am, and there will be a poll after this first quiz question, and Sarah really didn't tell you this, just to make sure that you're all still awake, and if you're multitasking, we're going to bring you back to the quiz. So here's the first scenario. A nursing home resident complains that the facility is keeping her money. They're ripping me off, she states emphatically. You talk with the business office manager who tells you that the resident asked to have her own phone in her room. She agreed to pay for the phone out of her personal needs allowance, and she uses the balance of that personal needs money to have her hair done and to purchase a few personal items. You then report back to the resident. She forgot that she was paying for the phone out of her personal needs money. She's glad you straightened things out. She really likes having the phone because she can keep in touch with her children and her friends. So now we're ready for the quiz, the poll.
Right, so those of you on the web-based portion, key in your answer, please. So, Shelley, there's an overwhelming number percentage of people who say, no, the complaint is not verified, but there are some others who have a different opinion.
Well, let's walk through the answers then. The first is pretty easy. The quiz question tells us that the resident is the one that's complaining, so that's the complainant. The complaint code is E37, residence personal funds. Now, this issue of is the complaint verified? Are the facts as first presented by the resident true, or I don't know if another word for that is accurate? And as the quiz question tells us, the resident complained to you that the facility was keeping her money. That is not the facts that the ombudsman determined after some investigation, after talking with the business office manager, et cetera. So the facility is not keeping her money unfairly or unjustly, but there is still an issue. The ombudsman was able to get the information, clarify the situation to the resident, and with that information, the resident then indicates that she's happy with the outcome and understanding, indeed, what is happening to her personal needs money each month. So although the facts turned out not to be as the resident presented initially, there was an issue, ombudsman got the information, and then it's resolved to the satisfaction of the resident. So those are our answers to number one.
Okay, number two. Mrs. Douglas's daughter, Karen, complains that the nursing home is refusing to take her mother to the dining room for the noon meal. She tells you that she has talked to the facility several times, but when she calls her mother at noon, her mother is always in her room eating her meal. You visit Mrs. Douglas, the resident, and explain the call received from her daughter. Mrs. Douglas tells you that she likes to eat lunch in her room because it's quiet. It's the only time I get to be alone, she says. The aides always try to take her to the dining room at noon, but she tells them no. She reports eating her evening meal in the dining room. So, what do we think here are the answers? So, the complainant is the daughter, the relative. The complaint code is D27, which is exercising preference and choice. And this is a complaint that, after interviewing the resident, we could not verify. The ombudsman could not verify the complaint. Again, being resident-directed, the resident has said, this is not a problem for me, and I prefer to have my, you know, lunch in my room and have some peace and quiet. So this is a case where there's no further action needed by the ombudsman. So that is the final disposition, no action needed. Sometimes there's confusion around a withdrawn versus a no action needed. And so kind of a rule of thumb for no action needed is when the resident tells you they don't want further action. Somebody else complained, but the resident doesn't have a problem with what's going on, then that is typically a no action needed. And we'll, as we go through, you'll see other examples of the difference between no action needed and withdrawn.
Thanks, Louise. So number three brings back lots of memories of when I've lived in several other states. You observe roaches in the nursing home. This is the fourth complaint that you've opened concerning roaches in this particular facility in the past year. Each time you report to management and to the corporate office. The facility has addressed the problem temporarily. However, the roaches return even though the facility has shown documentation of the regular inspections as well as pesticide records. This time, after notifying management and corporate, you decide to refer the case to state licensing and certification agency. The licensing agency does not find any roaches the day they inspect the facility, so they do not substantiate the complaint. So get out your cursors and key in what you think the disposition code would be for number three. Not resolved, referred, not substantiated, not ready to close, none of the above. So it looks like most people say that it's referred and not substantiated, and then we have kind of a smattering of responses in some of the other codes as well. The answer is the complainant is the ombudsman. The complaint code is K78, which has to do with cleanliness, pest, housekeeping in a facility. Should the complaint be verified? Yes. The ombudsman saw it. Residents have complained, it's multiple occasions and incidences. Disposition is what the majority of you thought, referred and not substantiated, because the ombudsman obviously referred this case to another agency for resolution, but the other agency failed to substantiate the complaint. And sometimes I think this is one of the really frustrating ones where you know roaches were present, but the other entity didn't see them on the day that they showed up. So let's move on to four. And yes, Louise,
just
you
something? There was a question that popped up, and I thought it kind of fits in this area, so I'm just going to answer it. There was a question about what if you refer the case and the say the licensing agency or the whatever the official complaint investigator does substantiate your complaint. What would the final code be there? And typically, when you are referring to an outside agency, you have the resident wants you to do that. They want action. And so if it's substantiated, typically your resolution is going to be resolved because you got the resolution that was wanted. So that was just to answer that question.
Oh, that was very helpful, and I'm glad you jumped in on that. Okay, let's move to number four.
Okay, quiz question number four. A resident tells you that an aide stole his family Bible. You speak to the aide, and she explains that she put it in his top dresser drawer. It has a leather and gold cover, and she put it away for safekeeping. You tell the resident the Bible's in the dresser drawer. He then explains that he still cannot get to it because he is unable to walk across the room and he would like to read it every morning. You address this matter of the location of the Bible with the staff, and the resident now has easy access to his Bible. And I think we have a poll. Well, it looks like we have some differences of opinion here. Most people, about two-thirds of you, think that there are two complaint codes here, and a number of you believe that there's only one complaint code. So let's walk through the answers a bit. Again, easy, the resident is the complainant. We saw that there were two complaint codes. Number 27, which was exercising preference in terms of using his Bible daily, and complaint code number 38, which is personal property lost or stolen. So if you took that one first, was his Bible lost or stolen, which is what he thought initially, we believe that no, those are not the facts as discovered by the ombudsman after some investigation. So, but there was still an issue for the resident. So in the course of working with that particular resident, the resident, we believe, raised the second issue in that if the Bible wasn't lost or stolen, however, it was in a place that he couldn't reach it and make the choice about using it daily. So that one was indeed verified. It was across the room. The ombudsman worked with the staff to move it to a place where indeed he could access it on a daily basis, and therefore that was complaint was resolved to the resident's satisfaction. So what started out as one issue really sort of broke down into two, and this might be a good example of why it's helpful sometimes to break down the discrete concerns brought to us by a resident, because it's number one, it's easier to assign a complaint code, it's easier to decide whether it's verified or not, and easier to assign a disposition. Louise, anybody have anything else they want to add about that one? Is there anything else confusing about that one?
I think we'll move on to the next one, and then we can pick up questions if others have them about this particular case as we reach the end of these. So, Louise, you are going to do quiz situation number five?
Yes, I have another daughter. A daughter calls complaining that her mother, a nursing home resident, needs to be moved to a room closer to the nurse's station because she feels isolated at the end of the hall. The daughter has a health care power of attorney for her mother. The mother agrees that she would feel safer in one of the two rooms near the nurse's station. You investigate and find that there are no empty beds in either of those rooms. The daughter insists that they move one of the other residents to make room for her mother. You visit the resident twice, and she tells you she wants to forget the whole thing. Her current room is fine, and all the commotion about moving is upsetting her. Okay, so again, we have the complainant is a relative, the daughter. The complaint code is C-22, which is room assignment. We did verify this complaint that the resident agreed her preference would have been to move. But again, taking direction from the resident, when it came down to it, she withdrew the complaint. She said, I don't want to you know, I don't want to bother with this anymore. It's becoming too stressful. So, again, in this case, there is a complaint. The resident agrees there's a complaint, but then says, never mind, you know, I want to stop working on this. And that is the outcome. And sometimes the ombudsman might, in some situations, might feel like, oh, you know, I wish the resident would keep wanting to work on this and keep, you know, fighting for what's right. But, again, taking direction from the resident, it is withdrawn. Number six. Oh, I'm number six. Excuse me. Okay, next question. During a visit at a nursing home, several residents tell you the food is often cold. You observe meal service and visit a few other residents who also report the food is cold. So you open a case on behalf of a group of residents. You speak with dietary staff about the problem. Initially, the meal time is adjusted to accommodate residents who are engaged in activities, but a few other residents still complain the food is cold. You continue to work on the case. The director of food services agrees that new heating lamps need to be purchased and orders them, also agrees to increase staffing during peak dining times. The management follows through on ordering the equipment, but there is not additional staff. You check in with residents a few weeks later, and all but one is satisfied with the improvements made. Okay, so the answers are, okay, the complainant is the residents. The complaint code is J73, which has to do with the temperature of the food. The ombudsman was able to verify this case, this complaint. The disposition, and some of you might wonder, well, one resident was still unhappy. Why is it not resolved? You know, why does the ombudsman not keep working on it? And there are going to be those circumstances where, you know, the nuance and the context of the situation cannot be expressed in a scenario. So in this case, there is almost, you know, for the most part, resolution. It's not 100%, so we have partially resolved. And it might be that the resident who's not happy, you know, is one who will never be satisfied, for example. That could be the issue. Or it might be you decide that, you know, the food, all, you know, all but one say the food temperature is good. It's the best I can do. It seems that with what the nursing home has done, they didn't need to add extra staff, but by doing the extra things they did, you know, they've gotten to having warm food. So, again, partially resolved is a fair, you know, resolution. That is often, I think some people feel they've somehow failed if it's just partially resolved. But, you know, that's not considered a failure. That's considered, you know, a good outcome that, you know, for the most part, you got things resolved.
Okay. Well, looks like we're ready for question number seven. The president of the Residents' Council complains about the amount of the personal needs allowance for residents receiving Medicaid. You meet with the Residents' Council and explain that the personal needs allowance is determined by the state legislature. The council asks for your assistance in presenting the issue to an advocacy organization that lobbies the legislature on behalf of long-term care residents. You and the state long-term care ombudsman meet with a representative from the advocacy organization, and the organization agrees to lobby for an increase in the personal needs allowance during the next session. Again, this one seems to be pretty straightforward. The complainants are the residents. The complaint code 114, which is specifically the insufficiency of personal needs allowance, verified, yes, based on the residents' information presented to you, and your disposition is that legislative action is going to be required to change that amount of personal needs funds.
Okay, let's take a look at number eight. A personal care home resident complains that the home provider will not let her go to the activity center each day as she has in the past. You investigate the complaint and discover that the activity center has reduced the number of days it is open each week. The resident was not aware that the schedule was changed and is now attending the center each day it is open. The provider said that she told the resident about the schedule change, but she, the resident, must have forgotten. You discuss with the provider techniques to remind the resident, such as keeping a calendar in her room with her activity center schedule, and discuss other services in the community as that the resident may be able to utilize. The resident agrees to talk to the home provider and her caseworker about what she can do on the days the center is closed. You check back the next month, and the resident reports that she is also attending a vocational program one day a week. She is happy with the new schedule. So, ready for a poll. Is this complaint verified? Well, we have pretty good split in the answers for this one about whether it's verified or not. And the answer is the complainant's the resident. Complaint code is I-65, which is community interaction. The complaint, should it be verified? No. And what's the disposition? The disposition's resolved. This is one of the ones that I mentioned earlier when we were reviewing the basic principles, is that ombudsmen always seek to verify complaints, but just because you do not verify a complaint, it doesn't mean that you can't take action on it or that it can't be resolved. So you see, in this scenario, the investigation revealed that the complaint was not accurate. Why? Because the complaint was that the provider was preventing the resident from going to the day center where the resident used to go every day, and now the provider was preventing the person from going as frequently as they used to. The investigation revealed that, in essence, the day center's program and days open had changed. So it wasn't the provider preventing the resident from going. The center's schedule had changed. So the complaint still was about community interaction, but you couldn't verify that the essence of the original complaint was accurate. However, the disposition worked out in a way that satisfied the resident because there were other activities and options available. The provider was very amenable to helping the resident take advantage of other activities, so the resident had a pretty full, well-rounded schedule of activities and could leave the facility and have the community interaction that the resident desired. So that's why at first you may go, huh? It wasn't verified, but the disposition was resolved, and this is an example of that.
And I think it really lends weight to the importance of, that ombudsmen really work with the resident. Maybe there's a misunderstanding, so what the resident thinks is happening isn't quite accurate, but then ombudsmen take that next step to get to what's the underlying issue and how do we get the resident what they want. So, complaints that are not verified still have great value in terms of your working with the resident to resolve the issue.
Thanks, Louise. That was a really good point. Shelley?
Okay, number 9. A nursing home resident who is receiving hospice services complains that he is in a lot of pain. He says the facility refused to contact his doctor about changing his pain medication. So you ask the director of nursing to consult the doctor. She agrees and calls you the next day to report that the doctor made a minor change in the medication dosage. You then visit the resident, but he is asleep. The nurse on duty at the time relates that the resident has been much more comfortable during the day, but he has still been calling out during the night. 3 days later, you visit the facility to see the resident, and the director of nursing tells you that the resident died the night before. So now we have a quiz. Okay, so if we can walk through the facts of this scenario a little bit. The complainant was clearly the resident. The complaint code was F46, and if you recall, the resident's concern is not about the pain as much as it is that he has notified facility staff and they have not contacted his physician to get a change in medication or dosage. So that's F46, failure to the facility to obtain physician services when there's a change in condition or medical attention is needed. Is it verified? Based on these facts, it looks like it is, because the director of nursing then contacts the doctor after your intervention, so it's verified. Now, the place where there's some difference of opinion is what's your disposition. The resident was the complainant, so the resident passed away. We don't know that the resident withdrew the complaint. And even though the resident was never able to communicate again with the ombudsman had three reasons to believe that the complaint was at least partially resolved. You had the director of nursing agree to contact the doctor, and she indeed calls you the next day to tell you that she's done that. You visit the resident, and the resident's asleep. Now, depends on how you interpret that, but is resting comfortably at the moment. And then third, the nurse on duty does indeed say that the resident is much more comfortable during the day. So you have done some investigation, you've done some work, and even though the resident passes away before you actually close the case, you do have three different indications that the issue was at least partially resolved for the resident. And again, that's tricky. If nothing had happened and the resident passed away, then it would be a different scenario. But some action was taken, and the ombudsman had reason to believe that the resident did indeed get at least partial relief from the pain before he passed away. So partially resolved. Anybody else have anything you want to say about that one? Because that one's, again, sort of tricky. Partially resolved is the category, I think, that gives our ombudsman in Colorado the most difficulty, how to know when to use that.
Yeah, I think when you look at that, it was verified through some observation, and, you know, there could have even been more. Again, we have a scenario, but, ombudsman could have looked at the records to really know the staff were telling the truth. I mean, there could have been more done to really dig into the verification, for instance. But there is some knowledge that action was taken to benefit the resident, even in the, you know, last couple days of that resident's life. So there was some partial resolution, as opposed to there wasn't time for anything to have happened, and it was just turned in to be no action needed. So
great.
Okay, number 10. A daughter calls complaining that her mother is not bathed as often as she should be. She does not go to the senior center very often, and she has to share a room at the adult family home, which would be like a board and care home. You visit the resident and observe that her skin is very dry, and she reports that she dislikes being bathed more than a few times a month. She has little interest in going to the senior center. She likes gardening and is outside in the garden when the weather is nice. She enjoys having a roommate. She is happy at the adult family home, but is aware her daughter is not satisfied with her care. So, what do we think here? Okay, we have a relative who is a complainant, the daughter. The complaint codes, there's two of them. One is on hygiene, F45. And then the other one is I-65, community interaction. Based on the resident's interaction and direction, we could not verify these complaints. They were not consistent with what the daughter saw as a complaint. So the disposition is no action needed. There was nothing further to do.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Let's look at number 11. A son is unhappy with his father's dining experience at the nursing home. On a visit, you observe all residents eating at cafeteria-style tables and using plastic utensils. No one helps his father cut his food or open his milk carton. The resident cannot give you direction. You and the son work with the facility to resolve the problem. The facility purchases round tables and different utensils. They schedule several in-services that focus on improving the dining experience for residents. The son is happy with these changes. Unfortunately, the resident dies before all the changes are implemented. So let's see what you think about the disposition. Okay, an overwhelming majority of you think that it's resolved. But then there are some who have a few other ideas as well, so that's good. In terms of the answers, the complainant obviously is the relative who's the son. Two complaint codes, J69, which is assistance in eating, and J71, which is about the food service quantity, quality, and utensils. Were these two complaints verified? Yes. And what's the disposition? Both are resolved. Now, this differs from the situation in number 9 that Shelley reviewed with us a few moments ago, because in this scenario, the resident cannot give the ombudsman direction. Therefore, when closing the complaint, the ombudsman has to take direction from the complainant, who's the son. And even though the resident died before all of the changes were implemented, the son was satisfied with the outcomes that were achieved and felt like the facility was moving forward and satisfying the concerns that he had about his father's needing assistance and different kinds of things happening with the dining experience. So the son was satisfied, therefore both complaints are resolved and it's time to close the case.
Okay.
All right, Shelley.
Number 12. A nursing home resident complains that only one alternative meal is offered at dinner. He would like at least two. He would also like a big screen TV in the lounge closest to his room. The facility, however, refuses to purchase a TV with a larger screen. They maintain that the lounge near his room is too small a space and there is a big screen TV in another lounge area. The home does agree to have two alternative meals during the week, but it cannot offer two on weekends. The resident is satisfied with the alternative meals during the week, but is not happy about the TV set. So let's look at our answers. The complainant is the resident. You have two complaints presented by the resident. One, number 71, which is food service. It's the quality, variation, or choice of food complaint. And number 64, which is choice and appropriateness of activities. Now, some of you may have some, I don't know, questions or disagreements about some of the complaint codes. Sometimes I know you'll find that there is not a perfect fit for some of the complaint codes. And so we've identified what we think is the closest approximation to fit the facts as presented by the resident. Were they verified? Yes. Two alternatives were not being offered at the time the resident complained, and there was no big screen TV in the lounge near his room. And here's where it's helpful, again, to have two separate complaints, because you have number 71, his issue relative to alternatives during the week was resolved to his satisfaction. However, his complaint about not having the big screen TV in the lounge near his room was not resolved. So verified, yes, but two dispositions. One was resolved and one was not.
Great, thanks.
Okay, number 13. You notice a bad smell when visiting a board and care home. The home had plumbing problems in the past, and the owner was slow to resolve them. The owner is on the phone, so you cannot talk to him. The residents express being upset with the smell and tell you that a toilet may have backed up again. the staff person you talk with does not know what is causing the odor, you open a complaint against the facility. Returning the next day, you learn that the city was repairing a gas line behind the home and ruptured a sewer pipe. You do not smell any odors. After speaking with residents and staff, none reported a problem with the plumbing the day before and are relieved the smell is gone. You conclude that broken sewer line was the cause of the problem and close the complaint. Okay, and the complainant was the resident. The complaint code is K83, which is odors. You did verify that, yes, indeed, there were odors. Because you, as the ombudsman, smelled it. But because it was not what you thought, it was a no action needed. There was nothing further that you could do to resolve this complaint.
Okay, now it's time for some of the questions that you have been queuing up. I see that Lori has been assembling these for us, and so yes, Lori, if you would ask one or two, and then I see that we have someone with a hand raised. So why don't we take one or two of the questions from the chat and then go maybe to Patricia?
Okay. One question was, what is an example of ombudsman discontinued? And how is that different from not verifying a complaint? And sorry about the sirens in the background.
Well, I think there's two different things you're looking at. So, one, you always seek to try to verify the facts of the complaint. Is what is reported to you accurate? So you either have a yes, I can verify this, or no, I cannot verify this. Now I'm trying to find the rest of that question. Okay. So then, once you verify yes or no, you still have to seek a resolution. And again, maybe the resident misunderstood something, so you can't verify their initial complaint, like if they think there was a theft and there was not a theft. But you're still going to seek to help the resident get an understanding or a resolution to that complaint. Does that make sense? You have to have both a verified or not verified and then a final disposition code.
Would an example of a discontinued complaint, and maybe this is too simple, but what if we received a call or a complaint, and once we got to the facility, the resident was no longer there. Would that be withdrawn or discontinued by the ombudsman because there's no resident for whom to investigate? Because it talks about when does the ombudsman discontinue a complaint.
Yeah, I think there's not too many times when the ombudsman would discontinue a complaint. You know, there has to be some resident direction, but it could be something like that. The resident moved, and you can't find them, something like that.
There's no resident there by that name.
Okay. Another question that came in was related to quiz example number three, and the question is, we shouldn't just close the case because we chose to go to licensing and they didn't act. We should look for more solutions. I guess that's more of a comment. So would you like to address that?
Yeah, I would say that's true. I can think of when I was a state ombudsman, there was a cockroach problem in a facility, and it was chronic, and so, but in this case, you had referred it to the agency, and so there you got an outcome from that agency. You may end up opening another case. You may decide once you get that disposition, you know, that might be the likely outcome, that you're going to open another case and start afresh. because your one approach to getting resolution didn't work. This is where, you know, on the ground, you're going to have maybe a different approach. We're just trying to look at these scenarios and what would the typical coding be for this specific scenario.
Louise, I agree with what you said, and I, of course, in some ways you have the ultimate answers, but on the other hand, going back to one of the things we said much earlier in the webinar, these scenarios, for the sake of brevity with the quiz, are just kind of thumbnail sketches, overview of what actions Ombudsman took. We could include the Ombudsman had tried every single possible avenue to resolve it and then went to licensing. So you basically have to assume that the Ombudsman did as much as they could and couldn't find any other avenue for correction, and licensing was kind of like the last resort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you are correct. There could be some things that the Ombudsman perhaps could do later, but to teach some of the disposition codes of when you can refer something that's not substantiated and it really is the end of the road, this may be one of those scenarios, and just assuming that all the other things happened up front. Okay. Lori, shall we take a question from someone whose hand is raised and then come back to the questions that have been waiting in queue?
Sure. Patricia Cowan, your hand is raised, so if you'd like to ask a question of the presenters, hit *7 on your phone to unmute your line, and you'll be able to ask the question.
Hello, everyone. We had a question about number 11. If the son is the complainer, then how did our observation of the plastic utensils get included in the case, and should we not just open another case with us as a complainant?
This is Sarah. I'll take one pass at answering, and then I would like for Louise or Shelley to kind of chime in. One is, it seems all we know on the face of that is that the son was very unhappy with his dad's dining experience. This little scenario doesn't give you 100% of what the son said, and obviously if you were taking the complaint, you would have asked a lot of questions to find out specifically what the son was upset about, more than we had in this little scenario. So the assumption is that the son was very unhappy and listed a lot of things he was upset about with his father's dining. Then when the ombudsman went and saw the plastic utensils and other things, the implication is that the ombudsman observations just added validity to help verify the complaint and the facts scenario that the son presented. So it's more from an observation versus adding a number of other cases or complaints to that one case. It was going out and finding that, yes, the son's complaint was verified, and then beginning to work on a number of those. Louise and Shelley, do you have some other insights on why you wouldn't open several other cases since the ombudsman made some observations?
I think what you said sums it up well. The ombudsman went out to basically investigate, verify, and found factors that contributed to, yes, we can see why the son is unhappy with his dad's dining experience. So it's all part of that complaint about the dining experience not being what I would say very person-directed or person-centered, and it sounds very institutional. So I would not say there would be another complaint or another case added to this. You might have maybe a couple type of dietary complaints, but you've already got them there. You've got utensils, and I think this is pretty complete. Yeah.
Okay, and to remute your line, Patricia, you would press *6. Thank you. Another question that had come in through the chat is to please explain the difference between resolve and not action needed. And for those of you who'd like to verbally ask a question, if you could raise your hand on your computer to let us know that, we'll be able to call on you and give you instruction for unmuting your line. So the question is explain resolve, the difference between resolve and not action needed, or to explain what both of those terms mean.
Okay, well, resolved is one of the disposition codes, and resolved typically it means resolved to the satisfaction of the resident, typically. So the definition of resolved is the complaint problem was addressed to the satisfaction of the resident or complainant. So that's your successful outcome. And then the other part of that question was no action needed. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, which would be like some of the examples that we went through where, you know, maybe it's a situation where, you know, the resident passed away before you could take action, or the complainant is a family member, but the resident doesn't have a concern around that issue. So that would be the difference. And I don't know if Shelley or Sarah, if you can add more to that or not.
Okay. So another question that had come in, someone had asked if you could review the disposition of question number 10 again, please.
Question 10. Let me see here.
Yes, on question number 10, we determined that there were three complaints, one of them being the situation where she had to share her room.
Okay, that's a possibility. You know, and I guess that could be a situation, though, where, say, in some states, like if the resident's on Medicaid, they have to share a room. So it could be but you're right, it is listed as something the daughter's unhappy with, so that I think I would say, yeah, we could have added that as a third complaint, and it just didn't get picked up in this example here, and probably should have. Yeah, so.
But no action is needed, I don't think, because the scenario says the resident enjoys having a roommate. She's happy at the home, but is aware that sometimes her daughter's not satisfied. So if you added a third complaint about roommate, it would be...
it would still be no action needed, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think we probably could have added that, yeah.
Okay. Let me get you another question here. I think there needed to be some clarification on question number 12 because it had said that the complaint codes do not agree. So maybe
question
can you just take a look at that?
12.
And if there needs
on 12, it should be I-64, I think. It's J-71 and I-64. If there's an additional question other than that, I don't know what the... what that means. And for 64, this is the gentleman who didn't have a big screen TV in the lounge near his area. I'm not aware that there's a complaint code that's a better fit than 64.
Which
and
is activities. Yeah.
Choice and appropriateness.
Mm-hmm.
And 71, food service, is clearly variation, choice, quality, et cetera. So based on his complaint, I think we would agree that that's the right code for that issue. But just in the answer, this is a misprint. It should be J-71 and I-64. Because J is dietary and I, the I category is quality of life, activities, and social services. So.
Okay. Jean Urban, you have your hand raised. If you'd like to ask a question, press star 7 to unmute your line, please.
It was just an explanation of the misprint that was on question 12. Thank you.
Great.
Okay. Another question that came in, so I will read it, and it says, it seems the quiz examples instruct us to code a complaint based on the initially presented problem. If another complaint is identified after the case is open, we would add to, not alter, the original complaint. Sometimes I get confused from an investigation, which leads me to want to change the original complaint as it was first coded. Is it correct to code from the start and not change the selected code?
Well, I think that's a practice question that, you know, I personally, from when I was an ombudsman, and I think what I would think the ombudsman in Washington State do is they might get an initial complaint and then later come to find out it's something different. And I think when it comes to NORS reporting, you're reporting on closed complaints, so you want to make sure you have the right code. So if that means you have to change it from the initial, that would be fair enough. Another question that comes up is, well, what if I referred it to the agency and I put, what was that question? You referred it out and you didn't hear back from them right away, but later you did. And again, you can, you know, what is your outcome? So if you need to go back and change that outcome for your final disposition, you know, at the, I guess at the federal end, we want to know what was accurately recorded as the reality of the situation. And we're not going to know if you change it. Because when you report, you're reporting on what's closed. So accuracy is paramount. Does that answer it?
I think so. Thanks. Okay, Christina McGillis, you have your hand raised. Press star 7 to unmute your line, please.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, thank you. I guess mine's more of a comment from the state of Connecticut. I've actually been enlightened today, so I'm very glad I participated in this training. I've been an ombudsman for many years. So I guess the no action needed is a concern of mine because a lot of times in our state, the complainants are very aggressive when they contact us. They want something done. But then when we go out to visit their family member, they're like, no, I don't want any help. So in listening to this training, I guess our state's going to be getting a lot of or putting a lot of no action needed, which might reflect negatively on our state as to no action needed means, you know, we're not being effective. That's my concern with, because I think a lot of us have been putting resolved. So then now to turn those resolved into no action needed, even though we call the complainant back, we absolutely 100% of the time we go out, we visit with the resident in the facilities, we might spend an hour with the resident talking with them, and then to turn it into no action needed. So I guess that's more, it's more of a comment than a question.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any, do you have any suggestions, comments, advice?
Well, I think you know, again, being resident directed, if there is not an issue that the resident has, you know, then there is no action for you as the ombudsman to take. And that's just a reality. I know kind of in the big picture, there's not a tremendous number of those types of complaints. I mean, there are some, but in the big picture, most complaints are resolved or partially resolved are the two biggest disposition categories. So, you know, the other thing I could say is if you went to the resident, discussed the issue, got permission to talk to the daughter or the son again, whoever the family, and explain the resident's position and kind of negotiated a understanding where the resident's satisfied and the complainant's satisfied, then you, I would say you would have a resolve. But those are where you have a real, you know, maybe that means there's a care conference or, you know, there's further action to get to that actual resolution. But, you know, if you get a resident who says, I'm fine and I don't want you to do anything, then you really, you know, you can't take further action.
Louise, if I may weigh in here.
Yeah. Please.
The going back to some of where we started, it's difficult sometimes to remember that these disposition codes are outcome codes, not a reflection of ombudsman activities and
mm-hmm.
time invested.
Yep.
So, for instance, under the full definition, if you go back to the NORS instructions on what no action needed or appropriate means, it basically means that after you do the ombudsman work and investigate and whatever else you need to do, there's nothing more that you need to do to achieve the resident satisfaction or outcome that they want. It doesn't mean that you didn't do good work and invest time in, you know, getting there, but it doesn't need anything else from the ombudsman to resolve it or bring it to the resident satisfaction level. So, yes, I can see your point and how difficult it is to code things that way. But there again, this is the dispositions are outcomes, not directly a reflection on how thorough or the quality of the work that the ombudsman does.
Thank you.
Okay, to remute your line, you can press star 6.
Thank you.
Next. Beverly Laubert, if you press star 7, you can ask your question or make your comment.
I was just commenting on kind of that last discussion. There seems to be confusion between whether the action is investigative action or resolution action. And we would call it resolution action
mm-hmm.
because an investigation is action. We're still going to need to look into something, but there's nothing required for resolution. So maybe we need to distinguish between the two.
Yeah, I think you have to take action to investigate the complaint. So your action might be going and talking to the resident, and that might take you an hour and a half of sitting and talking with the resident, but that's not your outcome. That's an activity. And so then it is, what do you need to do to resolve the complaint? And if the resident has no issue, then there's no action needed for resolution. There's no further steps to take. Yeah, it's they're very distinct things. And I'm not sure I'm explaining it very well, but it's what do you need to do to fix the problem? Well, if there's no problem, you can't fix it. You can't take any action.
Okay. Thank you. And, Bev, you can press star 6 to remute your line. Next is Elizabeth Margetta. If you press star 7, you can ask your question.
This is Northern Virginia, and we were talking about it in the discussion that took place. I'm not sure that those actually should be cases until, since we're resident directed, shouldn't we wait to take the direction of what the resident wants to do as long as they're their own decision maker? So there wouldn't be the issue of it not being resolved or any. I guess we're confused because we would not take the case until we checked with the resident and made sure that they wanted a case.
I think for the cases we're asking that you just assume they want you to help them.
But
for all of the cases that we are going over here today.
But in the examples, that's not the case because the son wanted something, and then when they went and checked with the resident, or the I can't remember, but someone wanted like their roommate or not to have a roommate for the mother, and the mother liked having a roommate. So that's not the example.
And I think there is a fine line where, you know, maybe, how would I put this? You know, we take complaints from people other than residents. So there is that aspect of you get a concern and it sounds serious, and so you consider it a complaint because it sounds like there's a lot of problems.
And yes, we do the same, but then we would, then if the resident is their own decision maker, then we would check with the resident, and if it was something like they about the roommate and they didn't see it was concern, then we wouldn't open it up as a case at all.
How would you code it, that activity?
Consultation?
It's just a, information and, consultation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that's something for your state to take a closer look at. It is, I'm not sure what to say there. I guess my concern would be if we always took that approach, there would be no other complainant than the resident or maybe the ombudsman.
Not necessarily.
So, yeah, I think that's your state practice, and I think it's worth looking at to see, you know, you don't want to undercount your work, too. So I guess that's the only thing I would add there.
Okay. We have go ahead, Shelley. Did you want to
I was just going to say, you know, if we have these instructions from AOA, there's the implication that that we are supposed to count those, and the disposition is no action needed. Am I wrong? I mean,
mm-hmm. Now, Shelley, this is Sarah. I'm looking at the NORS instructions under basic principles, and it says mm-hmm. The case is each inquiry brought to or initiated by the ombudsman on behalf of a resident or group of residents, which involves opening a case, and a complaint is a concern brought to or initiated by the ombudsman for investigation and action on behalf of one or more residents relating to the health, safety, welfare rights. So I think the instructions get at the fact that you can open a case because somebody brings it to you. What you do from that point forward depends on what kind of direction you get from the resident, but you can still open a case. Is that where you were heading with this?
That, as well as the instructions for no action needed,
mm-hmm.
If one of the examples under that mm-hmm. is... the resident, after your investigation, the resident says it's not a problem. Or the direction from AOA isn't mm-hmm. then to not count it as a case, but to count it as an issue brought on behalf of a resident, and then once your investigation revealed that nothing further was needed to resolve it, then you close it with that disposition. So I hope it's more than semantics.
Yeah, no, I think that there is that assumption there that, you know, that there can be, you know, legitimate concerns that are brought that require investigation, and depending on the resident direction will inform your next move. Yeah.
Okay. We have one more hand raised, so this will be the last question, and then we'll have to move on to the summary and closing as we're coming short on time. Linda Pickett, if you press *7, you can ask your question.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to echo the point that was just made, and I'm in Pennsylvania, and we had very clear training with regard to what is considered a case. And so for the most part, we are similar to Western Virginia. In fact, we do not open up a case unless the consumer gives us consent to do so and to follow through on the complaint that might be initiated by other individuals. So this is just, you know, very interesting as to how, you know, people are doing things differently. But we recently went through a major training with regard to differentiating the difference between an information and consultation and a case, and that was the criteria that had to be met. So, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess I wouldn't want you to undercount work. You know, I mean, family or others who have complaints that may not be verified or need action still give a picture of what's going on and what others see are problems in long-term
care. I agree. I mean, because very often, you know, we'll get the case, we'll go to the facility, we'll go as far as actually trying to investigate the issue. But if, in fact, that individual says, no, that's not a problem for me, I don't want you to move forward, then we are told that that issue would not be opened,
mm-hmm.
should not be opened. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is very good because I agree. I would want our program to get credit for all of that work. But so that's good. You know, I'll talk with our state ombudsman and maybe we can get further clarification because I think that we do underreport.
Mm-hmm.
This is Sarah. These calls always bring to mind how you can have a set of definitions and instructions on paper, but just the kinds of questions the WINC deals with, and we continually bounce to Louise and have conversations with her and back, and then we revise the materials, and then we make some typos or other things. But then it gets messy sometimes with all the what-ifs. I want to bring us back around in summary, and we'll summarize what we've just covered today with these topics, but this last bit of dialogue brings us full circle back to the first NORS training module, where the basic principles that came from the NORS instructions, I think, still ring true, where they define what a case is, what a complaint within a case is, and what a consultation is. And it's pretty clear in the instructions and the definitions of case, complaint, and consultation that the consultation does not involve investigating and working to resolve. So you wouldn't go out to the facility. You wouldn't check into it, look into it if you're doing a consultation. If you're doing a case, you have to do some work to investigate, come up with strategies to resolve, and some ideas about follow-up, or at least far enough along the line that then someone says, no, drop it, I withdraw it, don't go further. Then you hit a dead end and you are ready to close it and you have a disposition code. So I would say as these questions come up, a good rule of thumb is to pull out the complete set of NORS instructions. And some of you ask a lot of very good questions about the codes, complaint codes. There again, the thumbnail sketch of complaint codes gives you an overview, but it doesn't give you the full description. And sometimes if you're wondering, is it this or is it that? Is it a case or consultation? Is it no action needed? Is it withdrawn? Pull out the full directions and read those. So in summary, because we've got about a minute left, what we really focused on today were principles around closing a case, verifying complaint case, and the disposition. So you close a case when none of the complaints within the case require any further action. You've taken them as far as you can as an ombudsman, or else it's very clear that this is the end of the road for ombudsman action. And every complaint has a disposition code. So every complaint within a case has to have a disposition code. You follow the direction of the resident in choosing a disposition code. There are sometimes when the ombudsman is not satisfied that the complaint's been resolved, but if the resident's satisfied, then it's resolved because it's their judgment, not yours. One complaint gets one disposition code. If you have questions, we have been trying to collect them, especially Lori and Aaliyah, to respond later or funnel to the WINC for a response later that we'll post on the NORC website. But if there's something else that comes up or you want clarification, send those questions and little scenarios or snippets of information to Shelley, and you have her email address and her phone number. The WINC, with input from Louise, comes up with hopefully helpful answers that are clarifying, And as we mentioned, we hope in the next couple of months to have those answers posted on the web so everybody can see them to help us all think through these kind of fuzzy areas sometimes with definitions. I also want to remind you about Part 4, the activities, which really is quite a challenge to come up with, and the WINC has been working diligently to reformat that whole training piece around Part 4. That webinar will be March the 7th, same time as the webinar today. You'll get a registration announcement, and we hope to have the quiz and materials to you several days in advance of this next training, and this will be the end of them. All of the modules and all the materials will be posted on the NORC website, so you can download them and use them. The typos that we found today will correct and put the revised and updated versions on the NORC site. And as things get tweaked, we will pull the old stuff off and put the current stuff up on the NORC site. So before you do a training on NORC, go to that website and download the latest version of the materials. We date them at the bottom so you can tell if you have the latest version. And I would like to say a big thanks to Aaliyah and Lori, who helped us tremendously with managing the logistics of the questions, the chats, the phone lines, the muting, and setting this up, as well as Louise and Shelley for their roles in today's call, but especially all the members of the WINC, the state and local ombudsman, who spent hours and hours and hours wordsmithing and asking questions and trying to clarify things. And lastly, thanks to all of you for sharing your time and good ideas and energy with us this afternoon. So I think that concludes the call, unless there's anything you want to say, Lori.
I think you covered it, Sarah. Thanks, everyone, for joining today.
Yep, and thank you, Sarah.
And we have a poll for feedback. Please complete it, because we have used some of those comments to tweak the calls that we've done as we've moved forward along this journey. So thank you, and have a good afternoon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.